gotta leave your money behind you. Raise your hand to the sky. Ask the masses for silence.
Welcome to part two of Secure Act 2.0 with Mitch and Alicia. We have so much to say on this topic that we had to break it up into two podcasts. And honestly, I think I could do a third. I have so many notes on this subject. I have slides that I have only barely touched on about this subject. So there's so much more we could say, but we've already said so much that now we are in part two of this podcast. So I hope you enjoyed the first part, and I hope you enjoy the second part as much as the first, I guess, as well.
What about 529s?
Oh, my favorite
let's get some excitement on the 529 landscape.
Okay, so
529s, by the way, background, if those of you are listening that are not familiar, it's primarily used as an education savings vehicle for your children in a lot of cases, maybe grandchildren, nieces, nephews, etc. But 529s, tax advantage way to save for education.
And I will start by saying I already loved 529 accounts. I am a huge advocate for 529 accounts. I think they're fantastic. They are very flexible. They're a great way to save for your kids' education. They're just this is a type of account that I think they've done a really good job of trying to make it as generous as possible. You know, it's not the education expenses aren't just for a four-year university. They could be for, you know, a two-year school. They could be for trade school expenses. It can be for an apprenticeship. Like, the definition of qualified educational expenses goes way beyond just tuition at a traditional college, which is one of the many reasons that I love 529 accounts. In addition, they're very flexible as far as changing beneficiaries. You know, people always say, well, what if, you know, my son or daughter doesn't want to go to school and they just go into the workforce and start working right away? What do I do with this money? You're like, well, great. If you have another child, you can just change the beneficiary. As long as they are a family member, you can change the beneficiary and use the money for another child. You could change the beneficiary to yourself. You want to go back to grad school. Your kid doesn't go to school or has money left over in the account. You want to go back to school, get your master's or PhD or whatever it is. You can use those funds.
This sounds familiar to your personal situation.
It does. I might have used some of my son's 529 account for me to go to grad school, and I did pay him back. but it you know, just was a great tax advantaged way for me to use that money over time for my tuition and then put it back into my son's name when I was done. So like I said, very flexible. I've been a benefit of that flexibility myself. So that's really great. The other thing, you can leave it sit there. You can leave it sit. Your kid doesn't go to school. Eventually they have kids. That money can just sit there and you can change the beneficiary and use it to send your grandkids to college. So just very generous rules when it comes to 529 accounts. So I loved them to begin with. And then
That was even before Secure 2.0, the record here.
That was before this change. And to be clear, there's a lot of caveats to this new kind of provision that they put in with Secure Act 2.0. But even with those, I think it's another option for people. So what you can do with a 529 plan is you can roll over the excess funds in a 529 plan to a Roth IRA in the name of the beneficiary of the plan. So
can I mega backdoor 529 Roth?
That would be...
Is that where the caveats come in?
That would be very overpowered. Got some nerd lingo coming in here. That would be so overpowered. That would be crazy. No. There is a lifetime maximum of $35,000 that you can sort of roll over that way. So it's basically they're trying to keep it from allowing very wealthy people the ability to just pass on a bunch of wealth to their children in a very tax advantaged way. So they truly tried to make the caveats make sense so that people didn't take advantage of it and have it really be, you know what? You saved a little bit of extra for your kids' college. They've gone through their schooling. They're done. There's extra money in that account. What do I do with it? So the requirements for this, the 529 account must have existed for 15 years. The dollar amount that you can roll over is limited each year to the annual limit. So for this year, you can contribute $6,500 to an IRA. So you'd be limited to rolling $6,500 this year from a 529 plan into an IRA. But then next year, you could roll another $6,500 and then another until you hit that lifetime max of $35,000.
And by the way, this is another one of those areas where there's going to need to be further clarification. Because like the 15-year rule, for example, we had some internal debates here at Walkner Condon where, okay, the account has to be open for 15 years. Does it have to be under the same beneficiary? Does it not? Yep. What does that mean?
Yes.
Right. So yeah. That's one of those points that I believe is still a gray area.
Yep.
We're hoping for some additional clarification. And that's why we're here, right? Alicia, myself, the team at Walkner Condon, we're all going to stay up to date on these things if and when, hopefully when, more comes out.
Yes.
Right. So that's part of our job is to try to help facilitate and interpret some of these things.
And I am waiting anxiously for clarification on this one, just because I think this is such a great option. You know, so my question is like, okay, so you have a 529 account and you do all the transfers and then you change the beneficiary. And then now you're funding your second kid's IRA, or now you change the beneficiary to your own name and now you're funding your own. You know, I mean, you could just, you know, you get an IRA and you get an IRA and you get an IRA. Can you just keep changing the beneficiary on the account? Does that restart the 15-year clock? We don't know. So there's a lot of questions that we don't know about this. So I think even without the answers to some of those questions, I think that this is going to be a good option for people. It's another sort of like, well, what if my kid doesn't go to school? Or what if they, you know, we saved enough money for a 4-year school, but they only go to a 2-year? You know, what do we do with this extra money? So it's just another way for people to get money out of a 529 account without paying that 10% penalty. You know, they're definitely going to try to make it so people don't abuse this, which I think is good. But I think it's still a really good planning opportunity. So I'm very excited about that because I do, you know, I am such a huge advocate of people saving for education. You know, it's also people like to say, well, what if by the time my kids go to school, college is free? And I was like, well, you know, is that going to happen? You know, I don't know. Well, if it does, now you have an option of right. What to do with those funds.
Other tax advantage uses.
Exactly. Yep. And I'm like, honestly, if miraculously college becomes free, I don't know. I think they will figure out some type of legislation to give people options for their 529 accounts if it really comes to that. So
another thing that I think interesting are qualified charitable distributions, or QCD. You might hear. And for those of you that are not taking distributions out of your retirement accounts, you may not know what this is. But essentially, we talked about RMDs earlier, which are required minimum distributions. Essentially, at some point, an RMD is there to force you to take money out of your account to tax it, right? The government, IRS, doesn't want to give you unlimited tax deferment, right? At some point, it's taxed, right? Which is the reason for the RMD. Now, the ages are changing, which we've discussed over the next decade. Eventually, it'll be 75 years old. Now, some people say, well, I don't need the money. I don't want to take money. Well, you have to, right? And if you don't, you're penalized. We talked about that earlier as well. But this QCD, this qualified charitable distribution, is a way that you can take money out of your IRA. It can count towards your RMD, but it's not taxed to you. Now, what do you have to do that? Well, you have to send it to charity, hence the name, qualified charitable distribution. Now, one thing that doesn't match up perfectly is the age in which you're eligible to do a qualified charitable distribution and the RMD age, or the required beginning age. So right now that we're in 2023, we discussed earlier, 73 and above will have to take their RMDs, right? However, you can do a qualified charitable distribution after age 70 and a half. So there's actually a few years where, and to Alicia's point, if you tax defer, and all of a sudden you have this huge IRA balance, and then by the time you're forced to take money out of your account, you might see huge tax bills, you might see your Medicare premiums go up, all these unintended consequences of tax deferring the growth of your investments. And this QCD is a strategy that you can use actually in a few years before you're required to distribute or take your RMD from your IRA, where you can start sending charitable money out to the tune of, currently at least, it's $100,000 per person. So if you, all your IRA money, you do your, you can figure out how much you want to send to charity, but it can be $500. It could be $12,000. It could be up to $100,000. And any amount within that, assuming you send it directly to a qualified charity, I want to make sure that point, qualified charity, 501c3, right? Make sure it's qualified. Also make sure you don't take that money cash in your bank. That's going to make your accounting and tax prep potentially hairy. So send it directly to the charity. And then it's not in your income. It doesn't go on the top line of your income, and it reduces your IRA balance. So it can reduce potentially your future RMD calculation. You benefit society. It can align with causes that you love to support already, and it's tax advantageous. So I say that because Secure Act 2.0 in 2024 will be changing how much you can put. So I said currently $100,000 per person. If you're married filing jointly, for example, that's per person. So it could be both spouses could do $100,000 each, and that is going to be adjusted. There's going to be inflation adjustment in the future starting in 2024 to be determined how much, but it sounds like you will be able to send more money in a tax advantage way to qualified charitable distributions. Yes, I know some of you are thinking, I can't afford to send out $100,000 every year. You don't have to, right? Know that it's there. Know that doesn't matter who you are, what your income is. You, if you want to be tax advantageous and support your charities, you can do so in a tax advantage way once you're 70 and a half and beyond.
Good point.
That was a big one. Man, I was talking a lot there.
No, I mean.
You got that, excited about 529s. I got excited about QCDs.
Yep, exactly.
And I would love to do a couple notes on what Secure Act 2.0 is not.
Oh, but see, okay, there's one more thing I wanted to
Okay, let's
cover.
Do one more, and then let's do what it's not.
Okay. Oh, God, there's actually two. Okay, so there's two things. I'm fudging this a little bit. Now I'm doing two more, but one small. Effective in 2025, one thing that they are changing, and this is only for new 401k plans. It's not going to affect current ones, but they are creating an auto-enrollment feature, and some plans have this already. It's an auto-enroll feature where it's a minimum of 3% of your paycheck is automatically going to be, has to go into a 401k plan that an employer offers. You can opt out of it, but the default will be you sign up, you know, you get hired by this employer. The default option, unless you say otherwise, will be that anywhere from 3 to 10% of your paycheck is going to automatically go into this 401k account. And you can always change that higher, lower, but if you do nothing, that it's going to go that way. And there's also a auto escalate feature that will escalate those contributions over time over to 10 to 15% of your paycheck. And again, you can say, nope, I don't want to do that. I want to opt out of it. But ultimately what this is taking advantage of is the fact that people are lazy. And if you require them to do something, they are more likely to not do the thing than to do the thing. So if you have it set up for them to automatically contribute to a 401k account and that's automatically going to go up, they're just going to go along with it and be like, sure, which ultimately is a good thing because it's getting them to save.
They might not notice.
Yeah, right? They're not going to feel what it's like to have that money, to spend it, and then have the pain of increasing that contribution and losing that money that they were taking home.
Those are air quotes there for those
that
were listening.
Yes, you can't hear my fingers making the air quotes. But it's a good way to kind of get people in the habit of saving for retirement. It's something that people always think, oh, yeah, I'll set that up later. Or, oh, yeah, I have to go in and change that. And they just never get around to it. So this is a great way to kind of get people started into saving. So it's a nudge.
There you go.
It is a gentle nudge to get people to start saving for their 401k. Like I said, they can always opt out of it. But
And there's one other I think you said.
Yes. Right, that
you
wanted to highlight. Also effective in 2025. This is applicable to participants in a 401k plan who are 60, 61, 62, or 63. This is so specific. And it's giving them an additional catch-up contribution. So currently, if you're age 50 or older, you can contribute more than the 22.5, you can contribute an additional $7,500 if you're age 50 or older. Now they are creating an additional catch-up contribution if you are age 60 to 63. And the catch-up contribution is limited to $10,000 or 150% of the normal catch-up contribution. So it's very specific amount, very specific ages, but basically it's giving people who are, you know, really close to retirement, age 60 to 63, an ability to put even more money away if they, let's say, want to retire at age 65 or age 64, or age 63, or whatever it is. You know, they're really close to retirement. They can sock even more money away into their 401k account. So I think that's a great thing. Especially, you know, people who maybe when they were younger didn't save as much as they were supposed to, it gives them an opportunity. That's what they call it, a catch-up contribution, to save a little bit of extra money. So that is something to be aware of. If you have an employer, you have that 401k plan, you're in that age range, that's starting in 2025. So if you're going to be ages 60 to 63 starting in 2025, that may be something that you want to look into and take advantage of.
Absolutely. Thank you for that update. So there are a few things that the Secure Act 2.0 did not do. So over the last handful of years, I'll say people have been asking, and particularly high income earners, asking about, well, are some of these new laws and changes in Congress going to limit my ability to get any money in Roth or do a backdoor Roth or a mega backdoor Roth, for example? And for the last couple of years, we've been telling clients, well, we don't know, right? Let's see what ultimately gets passed through into law. We have more legislation that is law now. And for example, the backdoor Roth, which, background here, some people can directly contribute to a Roth IRA. They put in their $6,500 and they call it a day. However, if your income is, I'll just say, too high, I don't have the exact dollar amount committed to memory, and there's a whole phase out range and things, but if you make too much money, you cannot directly contribute to a Roth IRA. And the backdoor Roth is a strategy where you contribute to an IRA. It's not deductible. A little bit of time goes by, you convert it to Roth. And if you do it correctly, it can be a tax negligible event, I'll say. The purpose of this is not to talk about strategy necessarily of the backdoor Roth, but it's something for high income earners to get more money into their Roth IRA. It did not, the Secure Act 2.0 did not limit the ability to do a backdoor Roth. There might be some politicians in the future that still try to, you know, get something through to limit the ability to for high income earners to put money into Roth, but this legislation did not change that.
Similarly. And I think people have been expecting that for years. Think, you know, it's a very, it feels like a loophole. And it is a loophole. You know, it's called a backdoor, it's a loophole. And people have been taking advantage of this for years. And, you know, we do the backdoor Roths. I do it for myself. We do it for our clients. And every year we're like, okay, well, we can still do it. So we're going to do it. You know, kind of almost expecting at some point that they're going to close this loophole, and they don't. And every year that kind of went by that we could continue to do this and they don't close the loophole, we're like, okay, you know, I guess this is still okay. And I, like Mitch said, at some point they could still pass a law that closes this loophole, makes it so we can't do it anymore. But to some extent, I feel like if they were going to do, like, this would have been the time or the bill that would have done it. And every year,
some of the largest sweeping legislation when it comes to retirement in a long time.
Yeah, like if they were going to, it's not like they don't know people are doing this. It's a very common strategy that people have been doing for years.
I'm sure a lot of Congress people are doing these type of things.
And that's probably why they're not closing the loophole, because they are also the ones using the loophole.
And mega, right? I also said mega backdoor. So same concept, right? Mega backdoor is just the backdoor strategy on steroids, using a 401k plan to funnel more money into Roth. But see, I think the reason that they have not closed this loophole is because you would effectively have to say, you can't do a Roth conversion, or to higher income earners, maybe they put a limit on it, you can no longer do a Roth conversion, because that's part of the strategy. You are technically making conversion from IRA to Roth. And I don't think they want to necessarily close that off, because what if somebody wants to do a Roth conversion? That's tax. That's revenue now.
Yep.
And they don't necessarily want to say, well, you can't convert, because that's revenue.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they need some tax revenue. So, you know, in some ways, I don't see this changing anytime soon. That's just my personal opinion. There might be others even in our office that may disagree with me. That's my personal thought on that. So, you know, the part of this kind of last segment here is what it didn't address, as some people may have incorrectly thought it was going to. It does not limit backdoor Roth. It does not limit mega backdoor Roth. The QCDs I talked about earlier, for example, this was consistent with Secure Act 1.0 as well. The QCD age, qualified charitable distribution, has been 70.5, and it is 70.5, 70.5 still. And that gets confusing, because that used to be the old RMD age. RMD age is increasing. You can do qualified charitable distributions still at 70.5. And then the other major thing, in my opinion, and this might be the last thing we'll leave on here, is Secure Act 1.0, like I said, passed at the end of 2019, changed greatly how we handle inherited IRAs for what they call non-designated beneficiaries, and this whole 10-year rule distribution strategy. Secure Act 2.0 did not clarify anything when it comes to what the distribution expectation is through that 10-year distribution period. We expect more to come from the IRS on that. So in any case, and we thank you all. Hopefully this was interesting. There's planning opportunities. If there's a takeaway, there are planning opportunities.
There's so much planners. We didn't cover.
We are so here. Much. There's so much, so much. We are here for you. If you want to book a meeting, if we're already your advisor, we thank you for that. And we would love to have a follow-up discussion. If you're in any of these ages where you're kind of wondering, oh, hey, you know, I'm approaching QCD age, or, oh, RMDs are right around the corner for me, whatever it might be, right? Contact us, schedule some time on our appointment. We would love to help you out. And for those of you who are not clients, feel free to hop on the calendar. We'd love to have an intro conversation as well. And if you have realized that you have planning opportunities in your life, and what we just talked about might actually impact or even give you some opportunity, I'll say, let's have an intro conversation, see if there's a good fit. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time on Give Me Some Truth.
Wachter Conin Financial Advisors is a registered investment advisor with the SEC. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training. The opinions expressed by the participants of this podcast are their own and do not reflect the opinions of Wachter Conin Financial Advisors. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any individual. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Thanks for listening, and for further information, please visit WachnerCondon.com.